It's time for Windows Weekly. Mary Jo has the day off. Paul Thurrott is here just like old times. He's back from Amsterdam. We're going to talk about Windows Phone, some real signs of life, figuring out the Microsoft alias snafu, and who's winning in the pre-order game, Xbox One or PlayStation 4. It's all next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 325, recorded August 22nd, 2013. Install it to kill it. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that talks about everything going on at Microsoft. And since we can get rid of Mary Jo today, we don't have to talk about Enterprise. Thank God. No Hadoop, no Azure. Just a lot of Xbox and Zune. Maybe a little Windows Phone thrown in. Hey, welcome back to the U.S. of A. Thurrott is here from the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, the author of the Windows Phone Book at windowsphonebook.com. So you are all alone today. Mary Jo, what's she up to? In more ways than you know. Hey, we're all alone. We're born alone, we die alone.
We all die alone, Leo.
Yep. It's going to be that kind of show, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
It's back to the old ways. I always love doing this show the most because of you, Paul. Because of you and your upbeat attitude towards life.
So it's funny you should say that.
Why?
Because two events of the past week have convinced me. Well, I shouldn't say that. The two events of the past week are coincidental to the fact that I actually have a lot of good news today. Like, and by good news, I don't mean like high quality news. I mean like not negative news. You know what I mean? Like with Microsoft, a lot of the times it's like,
No, it's just.
So, for example, the other day I was out, as I do, celebrating life. And I mentioned to my wife how beautiful it was outside. And I'm like, the weather is perfect. It's really nice. And I just can't believe how nice it's been this whole summer. And as I was going on and on about how great everything was, she was kind of looking at me this weird fashion. And I was like, what? And she says, who are you? because I don't usually.
Who the heck are you?
What are you doing here?
Do you live here?
But the one that killed me the most, I think, was my daughter, who's 11.
What did she mean by that?
She said, let me see if I can get this quote exactly right.
Were you chipper?
She said, you complain too much.
Oh, no, that's normal.
That's what she said.
That's who you are.
I said, honey, it's a job.
It's my job. No, you don't complain too much, but you have, and I think this, for those who are new to the show, and I don't think there are many, but those of you who are new to the show should know, Paul's got a dry wit that sometimes people don't realize that you're very funny guy, and sometimes
I don't know, but
you're who is that comic that would talk like
Stephen Wright.
You're like Stephen Wright. He's the Stephen Wright of Windows.
Also from Boston, by the way.
Of course.
I think it's a Boston thing. I really do. It's funny because that kind of sense of humor flies in certain parts of the country and certain parts of the world, and then it falls flat in other places. So, for example, in the Netherlands, where I just was, everyone there is like that. Yeah. So, that went over great. But I've been to places like Dallas where I'm serious. You could hear a cricket chirping in the room. Nothing.
It's cultural.
It's a regionalism.
And I think you're right that Bostonians are kind of notorious for this.
We're notorious water bubbler lovers.
Yeah, water bubbler. I grew up in Providence. I understand the Bostonian.
Yeah, it's the same thing. New York, same thing.
If you grew up in places where it's gray, grim, and dark a lot, cold a lot, snows, you never really get to be a sunny optimist. It's us Californians out here.
You know, that's why I think we like the British comedy so much.
Right.
If you like shows like Black Books or Blackadder or IT Crowd, any of that stuff, it's that kind of humor.
I prefer it myself. To me, it seems smarter.
Well, of course it does, Leo, because we like this kind of humor, so it would seem smarter to us.
And smart people are naturally grim about life.
And I agree with you 100% that it is obviously smarter.
If you're paying attention, yeah. Of course you're in the dumps all the time.
Yeah. Right. I mean, because the more you know, the worse the world is.
Yeah.
You know, if I was a simpleton, I'd have a smile on my face all day long. It'd be great.
Exactly.
It would be the best.
That's the attitude. You know? That's it.
It's like the flowers for Algernon or something.
You got the shot, and temporarily he's going to be funny and happy, and then it's going to wear off, and it's going to be right back right. down there.
Oh, it's not going to last. I'm just saying, today I have some good stuff.
He's
today.
He's bouncy today. Well, let's start. Let's start.
I am happy.
Windows Phone. I'll tell you, we just did a review of the 1020. Tony Wang had it and is committing to 2 years with it. He loves it.
Right. That is the only normal reaction to this phone. It really is.
Instagram is now out. So I think didn't I see?
Well, no. So someone today wrote a story about a third party Instagram app, but actually, we already have excellent third party.
There've been a number Instagram. Of those. I thought Instagram came out. Oh,
I don't think so. I
misread the title. Sometimes I have to read these stories instead of just the headlines. That's really my issue.
It's okay. I should have picked one. Actually, I have a really good Instagram app. Which is, of course, an oxymoron of many kinds, but what the heck's it called? Instance. Ah.
Instagram has now told people that they may not use Insta or Gram in the name of their program, or they'll cut them off.
Hey, a British company owns the word Sky. Why not?
Yeah, who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah.
But they were right in their defense. We talked about this last week that, hey, if what about if you don't think we can own Sky, what do you think Windows is? A generic term?
No.
Yeah.
You did certainly make that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Make that call.
You got a point. Okay, well, back down. I'm sure that's exactly what the conversation was.
Oh, I'd give anything to have been there for that discussion. You know that's what it was.
Yeah.
You're right. You should challenge this term. Challenge.
Never mind.
You have a little term we'd like to challenge.
Never mind. So Latin America, very happy with their Windows phones?
So, some months ago, I think it was back in March, Frank Shaw over at Microsoft posted a blog post where he talked about how Windows Phone had 10% more of market share in certain countries around the world and actually was beating beating BlackBerry in 26 markets and beating iPhone in 7. And, of course, this caused a lot of people to be like, wait, what? And then, of course, he provided no details about that. So people did some investigation about that. And we talked about that, months ago. And so this past week, Microsoft announced, using information from IDC, that Windows Phone is now the number two smartphone platform overall in Latin America, meaning Central and South America.
That's a big market. That's not an insignificant market.
Sure. And they're number two in some specific countries. I think it was, if I could get rid of the ads on my own website, it is such
a... No.
It affects me too.
Let's not bite the hand that feeds us.
Companies like Colombia and Peru. And then there are countries where they're number three, like Argentina, Chile, and Brazil.
Now, are these countries where you can't get iPhones? That's what happened in China and Russia, right? They were big...
Yeah, I don't know that that's... Yeah, I think Argentina might fall into that category. But I think part of it, though, is this new trend in these low-end devices, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And it's that part of the market that I think Apple's going to be hitting in a couple weeks as well, because this is where they kind of fall flat, too. Where when Windows Phone first came out, they very much targeted the high end of the market. And now Nokia especially, but Windows Phone in general, has seen much greater success with the low end of the market, which kind of parallels how things worked in the PC market when you think about it. And again, we'll talk about this in a bit, but the low end devices like the Lumia 520 and the 521, both of which I have here, are fantastic devices for what they are. And you just buy them outright. They're very inexpensive. You can get a 520 right now for $99. It's amazing. And then you own it.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want with it. You can pay as you go, whatever. And
off contract price. Wow.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's some good stuff there. And I'm sure people will try to pick this apart. And I'm sure you're right that in some cases, some of those countries are going to be the places where, for whatever contractual reasons, it's harder to get an iPhone or extremely expensive to get an iPhone. I'm sure that is true. But, you know, that's the numbers game. I mean, Apple is always going to win on a kind of a margin basis, on a per unit profit basis. But the hope for Windows Phone is that they can kind of get in under the iPhone from a cost perspective. And certainly there's a reason now to think that maybe this could happen. So I've kind of moved from scoffing at this to thinking, hey, maybe this is going to...
You got to take the wins where you can.
Yes, you do.
And it's all part of a snowball effect. I mean, you're playing catch up. Look, you're going in the right direction. I mean, you got to say that, right?
I mentioned this on Twitter, and people, I think, misunderstood what I was saying. But we were coming home from Boston, a group of four of us. And this kid on the train walked up to me. By kid, of course, I mean like 25-year-old or whatever he was, a young guy, a young man.
Yeah.
And he said, excuse me. He said, is that the Lumia 1020?
Awesome.
And I said, yeah, it is. He goes, is it awesome? And I said, oh, it's unbelievable. And I showed him some stuff. And he goes, I am getting one of these as soon as I can.
Wow. Yeah, I think mindshare terms, the 1020 has been huge.
Yeah.
Huge. Microsoft.
Yeah, and it's really funny. You know, it's interesting to watch critics of the platform sort of position things in a different way. They'll say something like, "Well, if photographs are important to you, I guess that's a good camera." But you know, for the rest of us, it's like, "Wait, hold on a second. Who are the people that photographs are not important to? What do you mean? Like, I actually think that's kind of a big deal."
Well, what I would say is. It's what it's saying. Well, it depends how important photographs are to you. I'm willing to sacrifice the quality to use an Android phone.
See, I'm not, but okay, that's fair. I mean, certainly that's fair. Obviously, apps are very important to a lot of people and all that kind of stuff. But I think the interesting thing about the 1020 in particular, and I'm going to be very curious to see how this translates to the other phones now that they can get that same app, you know, the camera app that's on the 1020, is how. Just having the device, which is just a normal Lumia otherwise, transforms the photos that you take. And I think that becomes very exciting to normal people, because even though professional photographers may understand all the controls a little bit better, the truth is without changing a setting at all, you can just take automatic focused photos and they're amazing. And you feel like, you know, it's like when you see HD for the first time, it's like, this is better than reality. And actually you have that exact experience with this phone where you take a photo and you're looking at the photo on the screen and you're looking at the thing you took a picture of and you're like, the version on the camera is nicer. Like it actually looks better.
Life is more beautiful.
Yeah. I think that's a transformational effect.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't have the phone to understand that, but it is a big deal. I think
it's good for photography. You know, I mean, you can learn what all that we've talked about. You can learn what all those things like aperture and,
It has nice tutorials to explain how to use all that stuff, and you become a better photographer as a result. So even if you go back to point and click or something, you may have some understanding of what you can do now to change some of the settings to achieve better photographs. Just in your, even if you're not going to use that,
it's pretty exciting.
Yeah,
and it's good. Very good for Windows.
I like it.
What else? Let's see. What other good news?
I can move this along.
How about Delta puts 19,000?
I heard about this. A pilot from Delta contacted me about a month ago and told me that there are about 22,000 Windows phones, he said, and also they're going to bring tablets to the pilots. And so the announcement today was for 19,000 Windows phones. They're Lumia 820s on AT&T. That they're putting in all of, almost all of their flight attendants' hands, eventually all of them. I think it will go up to 22 eventually.
That's really, now, is that a deal that Microsoft worked, or is this, I mean, how did that happen?
Yeah, I don't know. So no one has said. I mean, there are announcements about this from Delta, AT&T, and Microsoft. So I would imagine it was maybe a three company kind of deal.
Right.
But the other interesting bit, and I've gotten a lot of questions about this, is if you look at the photos, they show the device with a kind of a credit card scanner on the top. And that's really interesting. The limitations of Windows Phone so far has been that those popular consumer-grade credit card scanners are not compatible with Windows Phone. Yeah. So there's something out there that works, and that's neat. And they're going to do it, you know, they're going to use these things for all of the expected, you know, in-flight purchase type things, but also for stuff for the flight attendants to use otherwise, you know, manifest for the passengers, frequent flyer information, and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of interesting things going on there. But I think the second part of this deal, the part that they haven't announced, is potentially as interesting, which is that Delta is going to allow all of their pilots to get free tablets from them, or if they have iPads, they're going to give them an iPad app, I guess. I mean, why you wouldn't just take the tablet is kind of beyond me, even if you did have an iPad. Right. And they're going to allow these guys to use these things in the cockpit. And I don't have the details yet about what the uses for those kinds of things are going to be and so forth, but my non-confirmed, but I believe that the tablet they're getting is the Nokia tablet that's coming out in a couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, one other airline's using iPads.
Yeah, I thought I heard that.
Yeah, and the idea is, of course, you replace a bunch of paper.
Like thick paper books, yeah, you know?
That actually costs money to fly around.
Sure, it would be dangerous, you know,
yeah,
around a cockpit. You don't want to, like, slam one of those things into a button by mistake.
Yeah. So I think this is sensible. And these will be RT. What will they be? They'll be Nokia tablets? What will they be?
If it's Nokia, they're going to be RT. Yeah.
RT. Are we going to see Nokia and that make some announcements at IFA, which is coming up in a couple of weeks? Maybe in
Yeah, there have been rumors about Nokia events, including one at the end of September or mid-September in New York City. So presumably, I mean, there's all kinds of things for them to announce. They've got a kind of a phablet coming and, of course, this tablet. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the timing is exactly or where, but I would assume, yeah, that could be any week now. Sure.
All right. Everybody in the chat room says, show the recital ad. Show the recital ad.
It is good.
Do you want to set it up? What is it we're looking at?
So this is a sequel to that wedding video that they made before where everyone with the iPhones and Samsung phones is fighting each other. And so it's got some of the same actors in it, which is cute. And in this case, it's like a children's school recital, and it's for the 1020.
And if I need to, I'll describe what you're seeing on the screen. I don't know how much I'll have to describe here. But
it's parents watching kids at a recital.
The curtain is about to come open on the school recital. And everybody holds up their phones. One person's got an iPad. That's nice. One person's got a blurry iPhone with a picture of a lot of other... They're all rushing the stage to get a better shot.
Coming at you. 2007 call. It wants its camera phone back.
Oh, Lord.
How's this for a drama shot?
Oh! Oh!
Oh, man.
Even the teacher is sneaking out with an iPhone to take the picture. Samsung phone guy pushes piano off stage. Parents rush the children. There's two in the back.
Closer.
With the Nokia Lumia 1020, we got the best seats in the house.
They're good looking.
Let's get
and
a group
smart.
Shot.
Smart.
You gotta wait for the ending, though. The ending is the best.
With 41 megapixels and reinvented zoom, nothing else comes close.
You know, every day more photos are taken with an iPhone.
That is awesome. Just the pushing aside of the today's big iPhone ad is so beautiful at the end. You know, there are more photos taken every day with an iPhone. Yep. More crappy photos.
There's nothing better than fist fighting Samsung and iPhone users.
Yeah, no, I never get tired of it. I just think this ad's great. And, you know, even if you're like a total app, you have to kind of look at this as smart. It's cute. I mean, it's
a great ad. And unlike sometimes some of these super clever ads, including the wedding ad, it emphasizes a capability that is unique.
Right.
It really says what it can do. The wedding ad didn't really say anything. It's just, why are they fighting? This ad had content, and I think that it gets the best of both worlds, where it's clever, it's funny, it gets your attention, and look, you can zoom in on this camera.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, and I've done, you know, I've not to beat the whole 1020 thing to death, but I think in every possible situation now, I've been out walking at night. I went to a concert the other night where I was right up next to the stage. You take photos in places where you've taken photos with cell phones before, smartphones, and you have gotten blurry, gross, terrible, useless shots.
Yeah.
And then you have the 1020, and it's like, oh, my God, these are unbelievable. You know, like, it's night and day, you know, to use an obvious statement. But, I mean, it is amazing. It's an amazing capability. And I think that's that's a cute way to show it.
It's really nice that there's a story to tell that it's, I mean, that's so important, I think. Terry H. in the chat room says, so violence in schools is now funny.
There it is. See? Exactly. You know what?
Yes. Yes, Terry H., it is.
I don't want to use the word rage, but that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yes.
Because, yeah, like, seriously, like, our entire comedy history from the Three Stooges to Benny Hill to whatever is just physical comedy is out because, you know, we live in the PC world where there can be no violence. You know, we're like, seriously?
Come on.
Oh, God.
Come on. Enjoy.
That's what I'm talking about. Those stick in the muds are always there. They're always there. Yeah. They're waiting. And it's amusing now because, as you know, whether it's these ads or whatever campaigns that, you know, in my case, I cover Microsoft. So it's always like an anti-Microsoft thing. You know, you can just you can look at something and you can imagine what the complaints are going to be, you know, because they're so predictable. But that was a good one. I didn't expect that. That's good.
Yowza. Let's see. Moving along. GDR2. We've been waiting with bated breath. We've been interested. Yeah. What does that stand for? General?
General Distribution Release, which is an awesome name for an update. I know. So we talked about this, I think, some weeks ago. You know, Microsoft had completed this release back in April, and it never got out to users. And now it's shipping pretty much en masse. I mean, I think the single big audience that's not getting it yet is a lot of users on AT&T, depending on your device, aren't getting it. And of course, there's a lot of outrage there. I think people on AT&T should come to expect this kind of behavior, but it will happen eventually. And I think it's great that this release is coming because there's a lot of important stuff hitting Windows Phone in this release. And I mean, I don't want to, maybe I shouldn't explain all of it, but I mean, some of the stuff they're bringing back or bringing to Windows Phone here is that DataSense utility, which last year shipped only on Verizon in the United States, a way to plug in your exact cellular data plan information, you know, the day that it rolls over, how much data you get per month. And then it gives you an ongoing overview of how you're doing on your plan, which apps are using the most data, you know, ways to get in and make sure you don't go over your limit. And so that's a big one. So I had only seen that on, well, the Verizon phones, obviously. So like the HTC YetX from Verizon, which I don't have, and then the Lumia 928, which I do have, were the only phones I'd ever seen it on. And now it's kind of proliferating out to all of these phones that are getting GDR2. So that's cool. There's a bunch of stuff in here for the music and videos hubs, especially around Xbox Music. And a lot of it is kind of behind the scenes stuff, but they fixed a lot of the metadata issues where they used to have like double albums, like some songs would appear to be on one and some would appear to be on the other, and that they fixed that kind of stuff. Or maybe the album art was screwed up, or there was an issue in Windows Phone 8 where you could download cloud-based songs that were in, I think it was albums and genre views, but not in playlists. And so if you wanted to download a playlist that you would create it to your phone, you could see it, but you could, and you could play it, you could stream it, but there was no way to download it, which was so stupid. So they fixed that. They brought back the FM radio, which used to be in Windows Phone 7. They made some changes to the camera app, and so you can switch the default camera, which is actually a huge deal, and what enables the 1020 to use the Pro camera app instead of the built-in camera app by default. So when you push the hardware camera button, you know, you get the camera app of your choice. I'm just trying to look through here if there's anything else that's important. It's got the Google updates. So you can connect to Google services using CalDAV and CardDAV, which is a big deal because, of course, they're getting rid of that stuff eventually. Getting rid of Exchange Active Sync eventually. They fixed the other storage bug, which is that thing where there's a kind of a weird part of the Windows Phone storage space that keeps growing and growing and growing. And in the shipping version of Windows Phone 8, there was no way to get rid of that. Nokia shipped a utility on some of their phones, most of their phones, I should say, that lets you fix it manually. And now in this update, Microsoft has fixed it automatically, so you don't have to do anything, which is nice. So a lot of stuff there. And it's Windows Phone, so it's a little convoluted about how you can get it and when you can get it and all that kind of stuff. But obviously, you can check to get it and see if it's available on your phone. You just check right on the device, or you can wait until it notifies you, which it will do. And then you can just download it, you know, the next time you're plugged in. So definitely look for that. That's kind of a big one.
Is GDR2 and Ann Arbor, are they the same thing? What is?
No, so related to GDR2, kind of a companion update from Nokia. So for their Lumia devices, and it's pretty much uniform across all of their Lumia devices, a couple of things here and there that are not available on every single device, but a bunch of updates there. And so there's an app called Nokia Smart Camera. I think I talked about it last week. It's not technically part of Amber, but I guess Amber is required for you to get it. And it's that app, that phone app that is also a lens for the other camera app, so you can access it right from inside the camera. But it lets you take a bunch of shots right in quick succession, and then you can pick between different camera effects. So you can do like an action shot where it appears the person is maybe moving through the scene, you know, like you see that kind of stutter effect. Or you can pick the best part of the scene. So you know, maybe it's an action shot, like a guy driving to the basket in a basketball game, and you can pick the one frame that's like the perfect one where he's just about to lay it in or whatever. And they have the kind of action view where it's like the vehicle or the person that's moving is very clear, but around him are motion effects. And so it looks, you know, it kind of accentuates the motion. So it's that kind of stuff. It's got the glance screen, which is I can show this too well, but on a 1020, of course I unplug it and it goes away. You know, which is this little clock type effect, right? So instead of a lock, you know, in other words, instead of a blank screen, when you hold this thing up and look at it, the clock appears on it. And it moves around so it doesn't destroy the screen. And it turns off automatically. So if you put it in your pocket, it turns off. You put it face down, it turns off and all that kind of thing. And it's you know, it's the thing that most people, when they go to glance at the phone, they have that extra step where they have to turn it on and say, oh, it's 251. And then they put it down, but now they can just glance at it and go back. And I think this was a feature that Nokia had on their phones, you know, previous to Windows Phone. And so they're kind of bringing that one back. There's also a feature called Flip to Silence. And so if you're, you know, having dinner with someone or a meeting of some kind and your phone buzzes or rings, you can just flip it over so that the screen is down and everything goes silent. And it's, you don't have to click any buttons or, you know, figure anything out. It just kind of happens. That storage check feature that I talked about earlier, this is the Nokia app that looks at that other storage part on your phone. It will actually tell you what's in there. Like, it will tell you what is being, you know, what types of things are using up the space. And then you can click a button and it will get rid of most of it. It doesn't always get rid of all of it, but it will free up a lot of space. So if you've got a phone with not a lot of storage or a lot of storage is used up and you try to install an app or whatever it is and there's not enough space, this app can help you clear that up. And then, you know, a lot of what Amber enables is you to get the latest versions of other things. So the Hero Maps, the Drive app, the Maps app, all those apps have all been updated as well. And so once you have Amber, you get a new version of those apps as well. So a lot of stuff there. And that's specific to Lumia devices.
Cool. You can't get the Hero stuff. You can get it on other
Lumia
devices. But are they updating it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So the new Hero updates go for everybody who's got Hero.
Yeah, I think that, I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but I think roughly speaking, if you have another type of Windows phone, I think that the Maps app is always free. The Drive app is usually available for free, or you can pay to get Drive Plus, which is the version that has the maps for the entire world.
Right.
And so you do have the availability of those apps across the other Windows phone devices.
Okay. Too. Okay. Sometimes I hear about these Hero updates on Nokia phones, and I'm wondering, well, does that mean that others, because we've all installed Hero, I would guess.
My cat is eating my Ethernet cable, so if I go dark.
That's good. You know, I learned that about bunny rabbits. Who knew? Love eating Ethernet cables.
I don't know. This is the strangest behavior.
Who knew? And when a bunny rat eats, when a bunny rabbit, it might as well be a rat, eats a cable, they eat it. I mean, they go all the way through till it doesn't work. And I was really wondering what would happen if they ate a power cable, but I
yes
at that
well,
point.
Well, have you ever, actually? So have you ever had fried rabbit?
Fricassee rabbit. Mm-hmm. I think that's what would happen. And I didn't really want a dead bunny rabbit at my under my feet at my desk, so I put the rabbit outside. Unfortunately, this was when we lived out in the country. It was immediately eaten by a red-tailed hawk. But that's a story for another day. All we found, it was actually kind of horrific. All we found was a little cottontail. Was all that was.
Yikes. It just dropped from the sky.
That's all that was left. There was a little. It's the circle of life.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Just take that cat. And tell it. Same. How do you feel about red tail hawks?
If it puts another cable in its mouth, I'm going to have to.
Out.
I'm going to have to dispense with it.
Out. I don't. Do cats don't have the See, bunny rabbits have a gnawing. I don't think cats can gnaw.
She doesn't usually do. There's wires everywhere in this desk, but this is just strange behavior.
Yeah, this is something to everybody. It really is quite a useful tip. Bunny rabbits, which make wonderful pets, of course, and fine food as well, should not really run around the house because they will eat your.
You got to see. This is just crazy.
Yeah, I don't. That's what.
No, it's stopped.
I think he's comfy. Like,
it's been rolling around in my wires.
What's the cat's name?
This one's either Dumb or Dumber. I can't remember. It's.
I think Dumber. He raised his head when you said Dumber. Wow, very comfy. Cats yep. just
see
love...
now. She knows I'm watching her, so she's not going for the cable. But
yeah, I'll eat this. What cable? I don't.
I'm not eating a cable.
Cable?
Actually, is there a cable on that webcam? That looks tasty.
Hmm.
Strange.
Oh, lordy, lordy.
Okay.
Moving right along. Some games for Windows Phone and Windows RT and Windows 8. Gaming's, I think mobile, you got to have good games on mobile.
Right. And to be fair, I mean, honestly, Windows Phone is a great mobile device for games. It really is. I realize that as things like, I don't know, what's that big thing? Candy Crush or whatever comes out on Android.
Oh, God.
You know?
Don't even mention it.
Like, we don't see that, you know, right away. I'm sure we will eventually.
Not a bad thing.
You're right. But honestly, if you go and look in the Windows Phone store and you look at the Xbox Live games in particular, there are hundreds of them. And a lot of them are amazing. This is not an area I think where we're lacking. But it was interesting to me that they announced an agreement with Gameloft, who already, by the way, makes games for Windows Phone 8. To release more of them this fall, and also games for Windows 8 and RT, which is news. And that's cool. So, for example, today, if you have an iOS or an Android device, you can get Asphalt 8, which just came out. We have Asphalt 7 on Windows Phone. You know, we've had that for a little while.
How's that spelled? It's not Asfault.
No.
That's a different
it's
game.
It's not. Okay, that's how I pronounce it, because I'm from Boston.
This is a driving game.
How would you pronounce it?
No, Asphalt. You got it.
Asphalt. Okay. Just,
so because sometimes people listening on audio might not understand what we're talking about. This is a driving game. You're driving on Macadam.
This is like the podcast I listen to, How Did This Get Made? He does Q&As, and he says, you give me Qs, and I give you As. People think he's saying, I give you AIDS. And he's like, I'm not giving you AIDS.
No, I'm not giving you AIDS, just A's.
You know, which I always
Whose fault is it? Ass's fault.
Right.
Yes.
Well, yeah, sure. I used to be the assistant, whatever it was, at a newspaper. And one day I wrote ass, period. You know, and like, no.
Ass editor. I'm the ass editor here.
Yeah.
So, but a good example, for instance, Plants vs. Zombies 2, which just came out iOS only. And, you know, everybody champs at their bit because they don't have it. Sure. And I think the problem is not the number of games. Nobody says, there's only 52,000 games available.
Right. No, it's the particular
game. The game.
Yes.
And if you want Dots or you want Candy Crush or you want Plants vs. Zombies, I know. You got to have one really good. So what is game? Gameloft does very good games. I like their games.
So Asphalt's the big one.
Asphalt. Okay.
That's the big one. And hold on one second. I'm sorry. I really got to get rid of this animal.
Okay. Let's watch. This is Paul. Gently and humanely, I might add, removes the animal from.
Yeah.
Do you have a cage of any kind?
Say goodbye.
A pillowcase is good. We have a cat so big that no cage will fit him, Charlie. So when we take him to the vet, we put him in a pillowcase. Okay, there we go. That little Kevin Rose moment coming here as, yes, Paul Thurrott has hurled the cat. The fur is flying. Wow.
You know, we go away for 3 weeks and the cats get...
Oh, he's happy to have you back.
A little weird.
Yeah. Did you have somebody come in to feed and water them? Or?
They were so nervous when we left that they were throwing up.
Oh, they knew you were going.
They can tell. Yeah, they can tell. They see the bags come out.
Yeah.
The house gets clean, and they're like, everything's wrong. Everything is wrong. But now we're home, and they're freaky. They're, like, really needy. And, you know, so what she's doing is she's rolling around, but she rolled into the Surface, which I'm using for this, you know, for my computer, which then pushed itself right up to the edge of the desk, you know.
She's basically saying,
I missed you.
That's enough. I've allowed you to sit here all day. It's time.
So anyway,
Game Loft and Amiga. So Game Loft, you know, some number of games, you know, some single digit number of games, whatever. But the Amiga one is potentially interesting. I have a feeling it's going to be stupid, but they're talking about like 50 to 150 games over a year, which tells me that what they've really created is an emulator for the Amiga.
Which is
fine. Because honestly, there are a bunch of Windows Phone, I'm sorry, Amiga games I would love to see happen.
Like these are like Amiga games, like the Amiga?
Yeah. Yeah, but here's the thing. So the Amiga was, let's see, I mean, gaming-wise, I would say the single strongest part of the Amiga gaming market was the sideways scrollers, things like Shadow of the Beast and games like that. Shadow of the Beast, sadly, not coming to Windows because the company that made Shadow of the Beast was called Psygnosis, and they were bought by Sony and kind of disbanded a long time ago, like 20 years ago, or less than 20 years, maybe 15 years ago. And that was the company that also made that game Lemmings, by the way.
Which and I one loved. Of the, I
yeah,
loved.
I think that was their one big mainstream hit. It was on every platform.
Very simple, but fun. Yeah.
And by the way, an interesting predecessor to the types of games we see today on mobile devices. When you say like that type of game would probably transfer pretty well to a mobile device, I think.
Yeah.
Well, Lemmings.
No, puzzle anyway, games are really good on mobile. Yeah.
Yeah. So sideways scrollers, I don't think. Well, okay. Actually, there are sideways scrollers we have today. They're very good on mobile, but they're perpetual motion games because that's an almost requirement of the device because you can't precisely control it. And so what they do is they just let the guy go. And then what you do is you control when he jumps or, you know, avoids an object. A lot of games on the Amiga were classic sideways scrolls, parallax scrolling, all that kind of stuff. I actually don't think those kinds of games are going to translate too well
to a
touchscreen.
Oh,
I don't think those
Sonic's available on iPhone and Android.
But I bet it's hard to control
and it's not ideal. Yeah.
Yeah. But there are other games that were on the Amiga that were amazing and I think would translate very well. And the games I would point although I don't know that they're coming, are like the Cinemaware games, like Defender of the Crown, which you can get now on the iPhone. Wings, you know, It Came from the Desert, Chicago. There was all these awesome games that were just great games, fun to play, and very obviously would be excellent on mobile devices. Now, if they're straight ports of like a 320 by 240 screen, yeah, we'll see. I mean, and that's where the emulator thing could get you into a little bit of trouble, but we'll see. So I'm a little nervous. It's like, we're going to release 150 games. Like, oh, that's great.
Well, it's almost like saying we've ported MAME.
And now you get
8,000 new arcade games.
But you know what? In those 50 or 150 games, whatever they eventually, some of them are going to be priceless. Yeah. And that's why that's good news. So I find it interesting that they didn't name a single game that was coming, you know. But I'm looking for it. You know, I'm obviously an Amiga guy from way back, so I have hopes at least for this.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's very exciting. And games, I'm telling you, they're really important to the mobile success. So your book, when you left for your lovely Amsterdam, the book had been done, but you still had revisions and editing to do. What's the status?
Yeah,
and
I still have a lot to do. But
Windows?
Yeah, I just updated it this week to address the GDR stuff. I actually had some GDR2 stuff in there already, but Microsoft published a very detailed list of what had changed, and so I was able to make some changes to that. So if you are downloading the book or whatever, be sure to grab the latest version because it has some changes. And I also updated the Xbox Music book, which had surprisingly few changes, but a couple of changes there as well.
Yeah, this is amazing. This is a 655-page book you're giving away for free. People can download it. WindowsPhoneBook.com. And you're seeing the benefit because you can update this on the fly, which is great.
Leo, I'm pretty sure that the resurgence in Windows Phone this year has been solely because of Windows Phone.
It's this book, my friends, that's put Windows Phone back on the
I don't map. Have any evidence to back that up. My son actually also rode me for this. During the trip, we were walking around somewhere doing some kind of sightseeing thing. I don't remember where we were, but he said, he goes, you're giving away a book, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah. And he says, what's the strategy there?
How old is he?
And I was like,
how old is his son? That's smart. This kid's got a business.
No, his retort, it was actually really funny. I said, the theory was just to try out a new, you know, way of publishing and see how that works. And then I could, you know, go forward with other books where I could get more money. And then he said, the theory should be that you make money doing this.
Kids, they're like, so right. Honest, aren't they?
I was like, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
You know, if you were a little more mature, a little more understand the ways of the world, you understand how it's possible to make money on something without actually charging for it. It's just a very sophisticated concept. You should just tell them that.
It's like the change bank thing from SNL. You know, how are you going to make any money? Yeah. Volume.
Yeah.
It's all volume.
By the way, NASDAQ is down, and so that's good news for all of you over-the-counter stock traders. Yes. Is that bizarre?
Yes.
Trading will resume shortly on the NASDAQ exchange. It was suspended for a technical issue. Halted for 3 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
That's actually kind of unusual.
Yeah. Yeah. Trading halted at 12:14 Eastern, which was about 3 hours ago. But they say any minute now. So get your checkbooks out. We're going to buy some stock. You got a Lumia. I saw a Lumia 925 over there in our Before You Buy product.
Oh yeah,
table and
yeah, you know,
looks nice. It's not as beautiful as I thought it would be. What do you think?
Well, you know what? So I just looking at it, I would say yeah, absolutely. Although I've been told there's a dark gray version that they sell in Europe, but I don't think you can get
white,
here.
White and silver, I think.
Yeah, well, I do too. And it's you know, I think my wife looked at it and said, I just showed it to her and she said, it looks kind of masculine. I'm like, really? Because this thing to me is kind of great. It's graceful. It's like light and thin. And, rounded, and I handed rounded, it to her and she said, yeah. And she's like, oh, no. Hold on a second. This is beautiful.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
It is a little slabby.
You know what, though?
Lumia is.
My view is so. See the picture of the four phones there?
Yeah.
Look at how brick-like all the other three are. And then this one, I think, is, you know, it's in this least, group of phones.
The least.
Yes.
Brick-like.
I mean, for me, because I'm so used to those kinds of phones.
Yeah.
Like, I see this thing, and I'm like, yes, this is thin, it's light, it's, you know.
The second from the left, for people looking at the picture, is the 925. Yeah. But I was thinking more like an HTC One or an iPhone 5 when they said aluminum unibody. Yeah. There's a little more plastic than I thought, and, you know, it's nice.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like milled aluminum, you know. It just feels like more thin.
No.
Yeah.
No.
No. Oh, no.
No.
How is it as a phone? Is it basically just 920 with a different body?
Yeah. It's an incredibly thin and light 920.
Okay.
And I think the one big differentiator, well, two, I mean, obviously it's on T-Mobile, there's one thing. But the other thing is going to be that camera. And it's not going to measure up to the 1020 from a pure quality standpoint. It's not 41 megapixels. But it does have a sixth lens, whereas the 920 and the 928 have, I guess, five lenses. So supposedly there's some difference going on there. And I haven't done too much testing there, but I think a big part of my eventual review will focus on that, pardon the pun, because, you know, otherwise it is almost identical to those other, you know, 9 2X type phones.
Is it? It's T-Mobile so far, only. So is it going to get on other carriers, or is this T-Mobile's
in the
reward
US,
for
I don't,
being so successful? What is the deal here?
Yeah. I think this is going to be it for the US and that...
Interesting.
You can get it in other, you know, in other support, parts of the world.
Does it support LTE on the T-Mobile network? They have a few LTE.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So it's a full-fledged T-Mobile phone. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty. I like it. It's nice.
My video has frozen, Leo.
However, you're still moving, so you don't care if I'm not moving, do you?
No.
If you suddenly stop moving, You also, there's the Lumia 520 and the 521, and I haven't seen those. Are they sold in the U.S. or?
Yeah, so the 521 is a T-Mobile exclusive. The 520 is an AT&T exclusive in the U.S. The 521 is about $149. The 520 is usually, I want to say, $129, and I think right now it's $99, or it was $99 on Amazon, I believe, very recently, and I actually purchased both of these to test them. It turns out they're absolutely identical, almost. Obviously, they have different, cellular radios to accommodate the different network types. They have the batteries are identical. I think there might be a for some reason, I think one of them has Bluetooth 3 and the other one has Bluetooth 4. I don't quite know why. But for all intents and purposes, let's say essentially identical phones. But because you can buy these things for next to nothing off contract and then use them however you will, I think and if you follow with the ad duplex data that they have every month about Windows Phone usage, what you might have seen that the 520 in particular has rocketed to the first place. It is now for 2 months running the most used Windows Phone handset in the world.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it's like, wow. And part of the reason is it's so inexpensive. And the thing is, it's not, they're not cheap devices. Like, they feel nice. The 520 in particular has those removable shells. So you can put different color, you know, backs on them if you'd like. I mean, they don't have the high end stuff. They don't have, you know, wireless charging, you know, that kind of thing. But they're great phones for kids. They're great second phones. They're a great replacement for someone who maybe was involved in the Zune ecosystem and wants a replacement for a Zune device. If you think about a $129 phone plus a, what, $60 64 gigabyte micro SD card, you now have a 64 gigabyte device for less than half the price of an iPod Touch for the same with the same storage.
Hmm.
Very interesting. And Windows Phone has a lot of great media services on it. You don't want to necessarily watch movies on such a device, although you could. You know, Netflix is on there and that, those kinds of services. But obviously, Xbox Music Pass is on there. But Spotify is on there. Pandora is on there. Rhapsody is on there. Nokia Music is on there. There are a lot of, and Audible, of course, is on there. A lot of great audio music services are available directly from those companies. Like, these aren't third-party apps. These are those companies making apps for Windows Phone. They all work on the 520, 521. This is an amazing way to get into this very inexpensively. The other thing you can do on this phone is use the GPS with those Hear apps. And so you could be connected at home, download the maps for your area, go out in the world without a connection, and still use it as a GPS. I mean, this is kind of an amazing, it really is kind of an amazing little device, or devices. I mean, there's two of them, but this is it. I think this is the mass market now. And there's a phone that just came out in Europe and other parts of the world, not in the United States, called the 625.
Yeah.
And this is a large screen version of these phones, essentially, right? So I think it's a 4.7-inch screen, not quite a phablet, but big for Windows Phone. And I've got one of those on order, and I'm looking forward to seeing that. But I think that these... entry level doesn't have to mean small, but I think that the entry level devices, you know, 512 megs of RAM instead of a gig of RAM, 8 gigs of internal storage with micro SD expansion, that kind of thing, you know, the lower res screen like 800x480 instead of one of the HD reses, is going to be the mass. I think it's going to be the mass market for Windows Phone. So that they're great devices really helps.
At this point, HTC, Samsung make Windows phones. Who cares at this point? It's Nokia. Nokia.
Yeah, I know. And that was the thing that changed over the course of me writing that book, to the point when I was starting to finalize it. You know, one of the big questions I had was, like, how much do I cover the Nokia-specific stuff? And by the time I ended the book, Nokia was over 80% of all usage. And some of the Nokia apps, of course, are available on the other phones anyway. But I ended up writing a small section in the beginning where I talked about how to choose a Windows phone. And one of the things I wrote about was, as good as some of these other phones can be, you might want to consider getting a Nokia, because there's a lot of other advantages to buying into that, because they also support the entire ecosystem with an amazing array of hardware accessories, online services and apps. You know, they do a lot of stuff that you don't see from anyone else, you know. So HTC might come out with a beautiful phone like the 8X, which is a gorgeous phone. But then that's the end of it. You don't hear anything from them until they released another phone about, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Nothing on in the interim. Nokia, this is their whole business. You know, they're plowing away at it all the time, and there's a full ecosystem of support there. And I think that's very important. You know, you're not buying like an orphan device that nobody cares about anymore. Right, because it's just kind of what happens with Samsung, certainly. And also with HTC to a certain extent.
Right. The 8X was a nice phone. I know that's the one Mary
Beautiful.
Jo
yeah.
has, but
yep.
Nokia's got it now. They got it all. Should Microsoft consider buying Nokia at this point now? I mean, if they are the Windows phone company?
Yeah, I mean, they did, by the way, right? So apparently they were very close to it. I think that deal is very complex. It's an easy thing to say Microsoft should buy Nokia. But, of course, this is a huge company that has national concerns in Finland that right. may make such a deal impossible.
Right.
And when you try to break down that company in ways where maybe that could happen, it, you know, maybe it's not possible.
It's a good partnership. And they've got a Microsoft guy at the top, Stephen Eliopoulos. And
sure.
Why let sleeping dogs lie? Why just?
Well, it's working. In other words, you can make the case that if it weren't for Nokia, Microsoft would need something that was like a signature PC.
Oh, you bet.
Or the Surface, you know, for phone. But they have Nokia, and frankly, Nokia is. By the way, the other thing maybe that's changed in the past year is just the sheer number of devices that this company has shipped.
It's amazing.
I mean, they've really stepped it up. It's
and they're
kind
all
of hard
good.
To keep track.
Yeah.
I know that's the thing. There isn't a dog. You know, there isn't one where you're like, well, this one's kind of a throwaway piece of junk. I mean, really, it's kind of amazing.
Speaking of acquisitions, I guess Barnes & Noble and the Nook.
Yeah, so this is kind of one of those weird side stories for us here in the Microsoft world because, you know, in many ways, who cares about Barnes & Noble and who cares about the Nook? I mean, from a technology standpoint. At least this country's only remaining large bookseller has obviously had a tough go of it for the past few years. And the Nook business in particular hasn't done very well over the past year especially. And so I want to say sometime over the past couple of months, they announced, they being Barnes & Noble, that they were in fact going to remove Nook from the company and possibly sell it to somebody else or do some kind of an investment thing with somebody else and basically disconnect it from the finances of the company because they knew that as an electronic platform, it needed to be updated more frequently than they could do and that its financials were dragging down a company that frankly isn't doing so great otherwise anyway. And he's not a founder, but a guy who I think he bought Barnes & Noble years and years ago wanted to take the company private, like basically buy it back. And that was going to go through for a while. And this week they announced their financial earnings, you know, for the most recent quarter. And there was kind of a shocker in there. If you've been paying attention to this stuff, they've completely reversed their plans. They're going to keep it in-house. They're not going to sell it off. The guy who was going to buy the company is not going to buy the company. He now fully supports what they're doing. He thinks this is the right way to go forward. They're going to keep Nook in-house. Frankly, they're also going to continue making color tablets, like those Android-based tablets. They had announced they were going to cancel those. And the reason I mention this is because Microsoft was rumored to be among the companies that was considering purchasing Nook, like the digital assets of Nook. In other words, they didn't want the devices. They wanted the other stuff, the services. And as it turns out, that rumor was true. So Microsoft had a $1 billion offer on the table to buy that stuff, and it was going to be accepted, but they changed their strategy. So
wow.
I don't remember the number off the top of my head, but Microsoft invested, probably just look it up, $300 million in Nook Media a while back, and they own 17% of the business. And so right now, apparently, what they're doing is looking at perhaps increasing their investment in this business and keeping their toe in that. So kind of just an interesting thing because this was rumored, and now it's known to be true. Microsoft did, in fact, have a deal on the table for Nook, but now it's not going to happen.
There you go. It's over.
Yeah. Because what we need is another Skype.
All right. You know what else is over? No more talk about phones.
Yeah. Let me look for that. Actually, there's more stuff.
We're going to have more later.
Okay. A lot of Windows Phone stuff. It's just the way it worked out this week.
You know, well, people are, you know, there's one guy in the chat room saying, why are they talking about phones? All the shows talk about phones. You know why? Because that's where all the action is, dude. Unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, so next month, I'm going to be talking in Boston. And I'm this is an issue that I've been trying to formulate into an article now, and I'm going to do it into a talk. It's about transitions. And this is the hardest thing in the PC world. And I'll just break it down like this. I don't know why this is, and this is something we really need to figure out. But if you are a Windows user from way back, for some reason you can pick up an Android phone and you have no problem with that. You can pick up an iPhone and you have no problem with that. But you pick up a Windows phone or you pick up a Windows tablet and you're like, you know what? Screw this. It doesn't have a start button. What is this?
That's interesting. Isn't that funny?
There's a weirdism to this that I don't understand. And I feel like,
I mean, the iPhone doesn't have a start button, and the and Android
and
doesn't.
No one complained about that. No one ever said
expectation.
Yes, and I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. I don't understand. Or psychiatrist, I guess. I don't understand.
You don't understand the thinking that goes into this. As a matter of fact,
yeah, but, it blows my mind. So, you know, I've been around for a while, and certainly you've been around for a while. I mean, you know that if you've been in technology, personal technology, for any amount of time, you go through these transitions.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we transition from DOS to Windows.
Yep.
We transition from Windows 9X to Windows NT.
Yep.
Right now, we're doing a transition to what I think of as mobile computing and cloud computing. And my God, are people freaking out about this?
Well,
like, they're just freaking out about it.
Yeah, and I understand if you like PCs, which I do. I mean, I really like laptops and desktops. It's a little daunting. I mean, I've had this kind of. I share the feeling. I've kind of gotten over it, but when this started happening, it was like, oh crap. Sure.
From a pragmatic sense, if you are an IT pro and you're working in a company and you're supporting, you know, Exchange or whatever it is. I mean, if you search your heart, you sort of understand that you got into this business where change is going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. That's your job.
Yeah.
Your job is to manage change. I mean, it's just that's something that just happens. It's always been true.
Yep.
But when you talk about like technology enthusiasm, you know, when people like us who just love technology, the sheer amount of fear that people have for change is bizarre to me, because it seems to me that part of the point is the excitement over the change.
You know, like, that's what I think. Yeah.
I a new version of Windows will come out and 2 months go by and I'm like, I need a beta version of something. This is too stable. Like I need the next thing. Like I always want to move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what, this is something I intend. I'm not going to have an answer. I'll make jokes and complain about it. But I mean, it is interesting to me, the sheer amount of resistance to this stuff. So anyway, the point being, yes, we talked a lot about Windows Phone. We're going to be talking a lot about tablets, not today, but in the future. We're going to talk about video games, because the living room is a big platform for the future too. All of these topics are about how the world is changing. I mean, it's still Windows, you know, it really is still Windows. But Windows is changing too. And, you know, yes, I'm not surprised to discover that people have, fears about it, because I see it every day. Like it's,
sure.
We'll talk about Zune and a little while. And Zune is another area where they're, you know, people outside of the Microsoft ecosystem kind of make fun of Zoom. But what people sort of forget is that millions of people use this thing every day. They love it the way it is. They think it's better than iTunes. They think it's certainly better than this cloud baloney that Microsoft's doing now. And they don't understand why anything has to change. And this is an issue. I mean, this is something we need to collectively deal with.
That's life.
So let's grab the stakes and the fire and let's go burn the castle.
Yeah. Microsoft's accounts and aliases. What is the story here?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
This is actually a fairly complex issue.
Okay.
So I go to live.com
and I log into my account.
Yeah. Well, in the old days, you would go to hotmail.com and you would have a Hotmail account.
Right. Now it's out.
And then in the old days, you would maybe sign up for Xbox Live on your original Xbox so you could play Halo 2.
Right.
And Microsoft would say, you got to have a Passport account.
Right.
Sign up for Hotmail or something, and you would do that. And so over time, everyone has these accounts, and now Microsoft has sort of formalized them and evolved them over time, and now this thing is called a Microsoft account. So if you log into Outlook.com or Hotmail,
it's all the same.
Or the Xbox or SkyDrive or Office 365, at least the home version, Microsoft account. You can log into Windows with it. You have to log, or you can or and should log into it with Windows Phone. Same thing. It's like this is the one account to rule them all kind of thing.
So I can I could change. Are you talking about my name?
Yeah. So this is something that has to change again. Like, in other words, I feel like this is just a step. But the way that this used to work was, well, actually, I don't know if we have enough time, Leo, to talk about how this used to work. So let me just simplify it a little bit. Yes. So in other words, I have an account, Therod@hotmail.com.
Right.
This is an account I've had since 2000 or 2001, somewhere in there.
I changed mine to Leo@outlook.com.
Yeah.
From
so in the old days, in the old days, you couldn't change it. You know, you just got this account, you had it. And if you started adding stuff to it over time, it kind of became indispensable. So for example, in my case, I have years of Xbox Live achievements. I've got my Xbox Music Pass now attached to it. I sign into this thing. It's one of my devices that I, you know, or one of my, it's the account that my devices go against, whether it's Windows a Windows Phone or Xbox Music Pass devices or Office 365 devices, both on the home premium version and on the small business. Well, actually, no, I'm sorry. The second one's on a different account. But it becomes your whole online existence. It's so important that Microsoft added, you know, dual-factor authentication to it because, God, you know, if you lose your one account, you're screwed. Right, I mean, it's everything's tied to this. The new version of Internet Explorer that's in Windows 8.1 allows you to see, you know how you can do the thing, you go to like a new tab and it says open, close tabs. You can open tabs that are open on other computers and devices that you own that are attached to this account. It's the Uber account, right?
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. You love it, except, you know, when something goes wrong, you're screwed.
Then
so
you don't love it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, and plus a lot of people are like, you know, Hotmail.com was kind of a cute account name back in the 1980s or whatever, but I wanted something more modern.
Yeah.
And so the thing that has never been solved is that lots of people, myself included, have created Microsoft accounts with newer domain names like live.com for a while or outlook.com now, or they've used their own accounts. And by the way, we could get off on a crazy tangent if you want to talk about what goes wrong with your life if you use your corporate domain name as a Microsoft account and then you lose your job and how what a mess that is. You don't want to get into that, but that there's another thing. So there's a whole mess around Microsoft accounts. So Microsoft added this thing called aliases a long time ago, actually. And an alias, there are a couple of uses for it, but one of the ways in which you can use an alias is because maybe you want to monitor newsletters, like you sign up for something on the web and you want to see if they're handing out your account, you could use an alias to sign up. Still goes to the same account. Or maybe you just want a new account. You know, maybe I own like Throt.com and I want to just make paul@throt.com an alias of my Hotmail account. And then I have this name that is more meaningful to me than Hotmail.com, you know. And so there's my alias, and that's cute. But, you know, it's a mess. So the change they made this week was that previously, if you wanted to change your primary account name, you had to go through a rename cycle. And if you wanted to rename your account to one of your alias names, this sounds insane, but you had to delete your alias.
Yeah.
Wait 30 days and then do it then and pray that no one took the name while you were waiting 30
days.
Oh,
that's terrible.
Yeah.
I should at least be able to lock it down.
Nope, that's not how it worked. Well, so what they did was they got rid of rename. And now what they're doing is they're letting you do something that's very important, which is to switch aliases. So now all of your account names are called aliases. So that throt@hotmail.com is now my primary alias.
Ah.
And if I have paul@throt.com, which I don't actually, but like, pretend I do, I could make that an alias, and then I could make that my primary alias. And what that means is when I go to Outlook.com or sign into my Windows machine, my Xbox, my Windows phone, I could use that one instead. That becomes my primary alias. That's now my account, essentially, for all intents and purposes, which is nice. But the problem is there's it doesn't solve all the problems. So, for example, I have a Windows Phone device that I previously signed in with my previous primary alias. Now I've changed my primary alias. Does my Windows Phone keep working or does it not work? I'm saying it should work, but actually, as it turns out, it doesn't work. So there's a problem. And then there's also the problem of people have lots of accounts like I do. So I have purchases that I made in the past on live.com. I've got purchases I've made in the past on hotmail.com. I've got purchases I've actually made on Outlook.com, like a jerk. I've done this across multiple accounts. Is there some way to migrate these things together, to merge them? No, answer is no.
No.
So I'm thinking that's going to come. I think that this the removal of alias renaming and the ability to switch which one is your primary alias is the first step toward the future that I think we really need for Microsoft account, which is Microsoft account consolidation, right? I probably have 7 or 8 Microsoft accounts.
Yeah.
And how awesome would it be to
own them all in one account?
Consolidate them, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, just, I mean, by the way, this
have
is...
have simpler access to purchases or services or whatever it is.
This is a constant complaint with Google Apps.
It's the same thing.
Account holders. Yeah. You can't merge the two. It's awful.
Well, I mean, from the back end perspective, this is probably a nightmare.
Yeah, that's right? Why. I'm sure that's why. It's just like, please don't make us do that.
So it's gotten a little better.
Yeah.
I think is the point.
Yeah.
It's gotten better. I should say it's gotten better because the previous system where you had to rename, well, actually you had to delete the alias and then just kind of pray no one stole it.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Like and that was the system until like yesterday. So it's gotten better.
That was really nuts.
Really, it's crazy.
That was not a good idea.
It's not a good system. I think we can all agree that. Yeah. Yep.
So the date is official. We know PlayStation 4 will be out November 15th in North America. November 29th, my birthday, the rest of the world. That's great. We still don't know for Xbox One, so we've got launch titles. We've got launch dates for PlayStation.
I kind of question the PlayStation date. That's a Friday.
Yeah.
And so if you're familiar with the video game retailing, you know that new releases at retail are typically on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. That's a Friday. But I guess that's the day that Sony does stuff. I guess Friday is their, the day.
Well, it's a great way to make that weekend something special.
Yeah. Right. Because, when a new Call of Duty or Halo game comes out on a Tuesday.
Yeah, ruins the,
A lot of people calling sick on that Tuesday.
I really think Friday's a better day.
It's a weird coincidence.
Yeah, I don't understand Tuesday.
Friday's why are you sick? Because I was up all night playing Halo 29 or whatever.
I couldn't sleep. I was distracted by the joystick in my hand. They don't call them joysticks. I'm sorry. Whatever they call them.
No,
whatever you kids.
By the way, that's part of my transition stock. So, I don't want to ruin my talk. But anyway, yes.
this is a talk that you will give if people pay you money. You will come stand at a podium. And you will do the transitions talk. There's money.
You ever go to walk through a park in a city and there's a homeless guy standing on a box? That's me.
That's you. Yeah. Speaker's corner. Paul. No, Paul's a very expensive. Charges $15,000 for speeches. Paul, I'm going to help you here. I'm helping you.
Wish I could.
You could. Of course you could.
No one should ever pay to see me.
My attitude, I set a price so high that if they offer it, I'm glad to do it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. I don't want to talk. I don't want to speak. I don't want to go out in public. I like it here on my ball.
No, I don't. No, I'm with you on that one.
But so I set a very high price, and if somebody for some reason wants to pay it, then I'm happy. I'll go. Yeah. You'll pay me that. What?
You got it. See, my son was right. But the theory should be that I make money.
Yes, I'm telling you, it's the wisdom of the teenager. The wisdom of the teenager. It's good news. He's thinking that way. Maybe
he's thinking of himself. Let's be clear.
Oh, all right. Yeah, my son's that. You know what I mean? It's like he says, "Hey, if this whole college thing doesn't work out, can I come back and work for you?"
I need to be taken care of to the amount that I'm accustomed.
Yeah, I'd like to live to the status of which I am same level. Accustomed. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, Henry right now is moving into his dorm.
Yeah.
So excited.
Colorado. Right? Is it Boulder?
Boulder.
Boulder, yeah. Yeah.
University of Colorado, Boulder. It's a beautiful campus, beautiful school, big school.
It's a beautiful
He wanted a big school, went to small high school, wanted a big school, and he's very happy.
How old is he?
18.
Oh, he must just be 18, right?
So he can't drink yet. No, he can't drink. Well, he can drink. He's actually quite good at it, but he's not supposed to.
Okay, so he is moving to the...
The pot capital of the world.
America's version of Belgium is right there.
Really? Boulder?
Boulder, Fort Collins, that whole area.
That's awesome. Oh, God. Apparently, marijuana is also legal in the state.
Yes.
He gleefully told me that.
Right.
And then I gleefully told him the university has a zero tolerance policy. And if you are not going to school full time, you will have to get a job. That helped.
Does he have glaucoma?
What's your medical status?
I can feel it. I can feel it coming up.
I can hardly see. Anyway, I have pre-ordered the Xbox One. I've got the launch edition, but we still don't have a date, right?
No, and unfortunately, Microsoft has also stepped back from their original plan to ship this thing concurrently in 21 markets.
I saw that. Why do you think that is?
You know what? I actually believe their rationale. They basically said that, obviously we wanted to do this. It was very aggressive, but that it's basically localization work that's
it's a lot
causing
of work.
The trip up. And it's not just like the additional voices and languages of all the built-in experiences. It's that if you think about every market in the world, whether you're talking about, Japan or Europe or someplace in Asia or South America, whatever it is, there are apps and services that are important to those markets that we don't even know about in the United States, and that those things need to be in place for that device to make sense for there.
Right.
And I don't think some of those deals have come together either. It's like when you go to China, they have different instant messaging networks that are very important. Different social networking services that are very important. You have to, you have to have those things.
Yeah.
So if you go to China with like Facebook and Twitter, they don't even know what you're talking about. Right. You need to have the stuff. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's too bad though because of course Xbox has pulled a Windows this year. You know, like they can't get anything right. So they kind of come out like, we're going to launch in 21 countries. Just kidding.
Oops.
You know, not to mention
they
the fact
they shouldn't have said that. You're right. It was, you know, this is not new information that you have to localize it.
I know. It's just too bad. Yeah, so it's too bad. There's that.
That's all right.
They did announce 30 launch titles, some of which look pretty good. And I think the one advantage that Microsoft has over Sony from a like a game title perspective is that even the games that are non-exclusives, you know, when you look at games like Call of Duty would be a great example, where you can get it on basically any platform, there are advantages to being on Xbox for that because we get stuff first. You know, so the game will launch concurrently for PlayStation 3 and 4, for Xbox 360 and 1, and for whatever, you know, like a PC and maybe some other platforms. But when the downloadable content hits over the course of the year, Xbox always gets that stuff first. And that happens across actually a range of titles. And so they've got a lot of, I wouldn't say they have more exclusives because I don't actually know that for a fact, but they seem to have more content exclusives, I guess I'd call it. So even for games that are available elsewhere, you know, you get stuff first on Xbox. And so that's kind of a nice advantage. Sony announced 15 launch titles on Blu-ray, meaning they'll be sold at retail, and then 18, that will only be delivered electronically. I'm not as up on the PlayStation world, but, you know, in Xbox land, we call that stuff like Xbox Live Arcade, and I'm not positive that those games are, say, you know, less impressive or less interesting than the retail ones, but I suspect they are because it seems like the really big games, you'd ship both, you know, electronic and retail, but basically 33 games, let's say, so versus 30 for the Xbox One. And Sony also announced that they had 1 million pre-orders for the PlayStation 4, whereas Microsoft announced nothing regarding pre-orders. So I would assume it was less than 1 million.
Huh. Maybe. Really?
Maybe. Yeah. Well, Microsoft's not quiet when they have good news.
Right.
You know?
Do you think PlayStation 4 won this round?
Well, yes. I would say leading up to launch, there's no doubt that PlayStation's, Sony's, I guess, their messaging has been better.
Yeah.
Both from the perspective of the audience, what they want to hear. They got it right. And more consistent. You know, Microsoft has been like the Three Stooges, like bumping into each other and falling down. And
I
feel really bad about that. And it's just, like I've said before, it's a very strange thing. If you've been following Xbox all these years, they've never had a moment like this. I mean, even when they were spending $1 billion+ to fix Xboxes and extend the warranty, nothing. No problem. Great.
I know. Isn't that funny? I mean, that really, that was the like time you could take a big hit.
Yeah. This has been like a, you know, Chevy Chase doing President Ford impersonation. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. It's crazy. Yeah. So,
I'm still bullish on it. I can't wait to get mine.
I think it's going to be fine. And in fact, I would, like you asked, you said, did you think they won? Yeah, I think they won the pre-release cycle.
That doesn't really matter. I mean,
yeah, it's what's going to matter is how things happen in the real world going forward. I think this first year, it's going to be neck and neck. And I think both of these things are going to do just fine. I would just remind people too. I mean, dedicated video game consoles, fairly limited market, you know, so they'll both sell several million copies of these things, I guess, over the next year, whatever.
It's not even like the tablet market. I mean, it's tiny.
It's not even close. Yeah, not even close. So, you know, obviously the living room is important, but it's interesting to me how it has continued to elude everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's no one has turned this into a great market. No one dominates it. I don't know why.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm getting that new OLED, the curved OLED screen TV, and I could just Xbox One on that.
Sure.
With a surround sound system, turn out the lights.
Yep.
I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, I think the PlayStation 4 is going to be great too. And by the way, I mentioned those Amiga games. Shadow of the Beast, which was an amazing side-scrolling parallax graphics, you know, awesomeness back in the late 80s, early 90s. They are owned by Sony, and they're releasing a new version of that for the PS4. And they're reimagining it, so I don't actually think it's going to be a side-scroller, but actually I'd be happy if it was. But I'm actually very curious to see that. Like, that's definitely one game I'll try on the PS4, just because I was such a fan of the original series, you know, back on the Amiga.
And Microsoft's saying that they will never, this is surprising.
I know.
Never sell the Xbox One minus the Kinect. It's like, you got to have it.
So I've argued that they should get rid of the Kinect. And
I think that scares some people, especially in this post-NSA era. I don't think that's reasonable.
I don't think that's, I think that's insane. And I think you're right, by the way. I get that a lot.
Yeah.
But the argument I've gotten, which is from people, which is interesting. It's always interesting to have average people defend the giant software company, you know. But they've said to me correctly that the reason Microsoft is doing this, because if they didn't bundle it, no developer would ever.
Yeah.
But see, actually, that's not true. Oh, no one would buy it.
That no one would buy true. It, and then no developer would develop for it if
the
no
developer
one buys
wouldn't
it.
Develop. So actually, that's not true. So I actually think that Microsoft would be within its rights to require connectivity to any software title released on the Xbox One, right?
They have even control. They can say no.
There's no reason they couldn't do that.
Yep.
And then we could all save $100 for those of us who don't want it.
Well, that's a good
point. The other thing I feel really strongly about, and I said this about the Kinect V1 on the 360, is the big functionality on the Kinect, as far as I'm concerned, is not this thing where you're waving your arms around and control like you're some kind of a, right. I don't know what you are, Minority Report person. That's stupid.
It's talking to it.
It's talking to it.
Yeah.
And you know what you could do without a Kinect? You could talk to it. They could just build a microphone into the console.
Right. Yeah.
They don't need a Kinect for that.
No. Good point.
This is a design decision. This is what I call faux bundling.
Yeah.
It's pretend, it's forced, and it's not real. It's real. It's physically real. But I mean, it's baloney. And I wish they had done this differently. They didn't. But yeah, this week they said, yeah, we're never gonna sell it without it. So it's like you get Kinect whether you want it or not. And
I think there are a lot of people who would say, great, $100 off. I don't need a Kinect.
I would be
one of those people because I bought a Kinect and I used it. I liked it, but I didn't use it enough to make
That's what everyone does. I got one sitting. It's a dust magnet.
Right.
You know,
no way to sell a product to make people buy it that don't want it. Makes people
Sony,
angry.
Sony is doing exactly this. They're not selling their PS4 with their version of Kinect. That's an add-on.
The Move.
Yeah. You can buy it if you want it. I think that's the way
always
it should be.
Always dumb. To do this, that's dumb. Forced bundling is dumb.
Bundle it and you are dumb.
Dumb. I am excited about this trade-in deal, though, because I have a lot of old Xbox 360 games. This is from Amazon, not Microsoft. This is Amazon.
Right. And actually, so since I wrote this, I've been told that someone else, and it might be GameSpot. Let me see. Search if that is true.
GameStop. I always say GameSpot, too.
Yeah. So I guess GameStop. You know that place.
You know, it's like where you buy store. The games.
It's always between like a Chipotle and a
it is. It's next
Bob's
to,
Burgers.
It's
or,
next
I don't
to
know.
Noah's Bagels in Petaluma.
Yeah, it's like Old Navy.
Yeah,
Chipotle.
It's in the mall. It's in the mall.
Whatever. I don't know.
We got a Kmart over there. Yeah.
Yeah. I drive by them. I apparently people go there sometimes. I don't know. So anyway, I guess they have a less restrictive deal as well. But the Amazon one is fairly convoluted. They have like 8 games. They're all A-list titles.
Oh, it's not all of the games.
It's not all games.
Okay.
But the idea, and you can only do one game per customer and all this kind of stuff. But actually, assuming you want to do this, it's a good deal. It will be $10 or less. You buy the 360 version of the game. You play it for a little while. And then you trade it in. And they give you some kind of redemption value. And it will always be a minimum of some amount. And then the most you'll pay for the Xbox One version of the game is $10.
Oh.
And it could actually be less. It could be $5.
Oh, you know, that's great. Depending.
Yeah. And so it's some pretty good games, too. It's like Madden NFL, Call of Duty Ghosts, FIFA 14, NBA 2K14, Battlefield 4, Assassin's Creed, Black Flag, Need for Speed Rivals, and Watch Dogs. So they're all A-list titles.
Really recent titles, too. And so it's reasonable to say people would be a little pissed off if they bought Watch Dogs.
Yeah, it's super convoluted. I described the process as a curious combination of long and vague, like the instructions you get with IKEA furniture.
Yeah, or the instructions about what's going to happen to your Xbox Live Gold account, family account. Because I got those instructions from Microsoft, and I still don't know what's happening.
Yeah, you know, okay, so that's an interesting point. And what I found, and this is true of the Microsoft account thing we talked about, the aliases, they describe things, and they make no sense. It's like I recognize the words as sentences, sort of, and oftentimes it's like you have to do it before you fully understand it.
Yes.
So a lot of times with Microsoft, I'll get emails from people who will say, so I read their thing that you wrote, or I read the thing that Microsoft wrote. What will happen if I do this? And I can't, I guess no I could idea. Speculate. You have to wait until you see it.
You just have to do it.
Because you can't, happens. I, you know, it's like the alias thing with Windows Phone. Like, all right, so I changed my primary alias from something to something else. My primary alias is what I use to sign on to Windows Phone. Will that just work? Now, logically, I think, yes, of course. Why wouldn't it work? I don't, you know. I'm still testing it. Let's just say I've had mixed results so far. Yeah. But, I mean, it's a tough thing to be able to say definitively, oh, yeah, that will work fine. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
So just pleased to see that Mary Jo Foley, who is not with us, as if you're just tuning in, she's a little busy. She says, apparently, and this is a, she just tweeted this, she's doing beer research.
No, I just saw that.
Yeah. So Mary Jo, busted.
She's got a nice picture of a blackboard with like 100 beers
busted.
On it.
Busted.
See if I recognize
a
any of them.
A through Z, and it ran out, so they've got 1, 2, and 3. There's a lot of beer flying.
Where lucky. Is she? Is she in Toronto or something? Or
I don't know. King Dark. Le Truon something. Wow. She must be in Montreal. I mean,
Quebec. Yeah, exactly.
It would only be Quebec where they'd name a beer poutine.
Oh, that would be a great beer. Poutine is one of the great foodstuffs of our planet, Leo.
Really? You know, I've never had it only because it just makes me nervous.
It's fries with cheese curds and gravy.
Yeah.
It's everything a growing boy needs.
If someday you see the news story, Leo Laporte keeled over after a large meal.
Killed by poutine.
It will be poutine.
His dying words, damn you, Thurrott.
Oh, gravy.
Yes.
Oh.
Well. There are worse ways to go.
There are worse ways to go. I will grant you that. Google versus Microsoft. You have a different take on it than Dvorak. Dvorak said, and I kind of thought the same thing, that Microsoft sandbagged Google. Microsoft
you
knew.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think they did the first time, too. They knew exactly what they were doing.
That's amazing.
And they
all
knew
right,
Google would have to pull the plug and that they could cry foul and look like the good guys.
Okay, so... I'm not going to say that I can prove that's not true, but I think I'll throw out some evidence. I think
good. Yeah, I'd love to. I'm open to this. I'm not attached to this theory.
Before I get to that, though, I just wanted to say, you know, the problem I have with it, like one of the arguments I'll hear on the pro Google side of this, although I'm kind of surprised there is a pro Google side of this story, but is that, you know, YouTube is Google's service and they have a right to restrict access to it and make up whatever baloney rules they want, which, by the way, you're right. You're right. They do. I agree with that 100%. The primary issue I have with this whole situation is that Google presented a problem and they said your app that you released without our help or, you know, like they were ever going to help, doesn't serve our ads because our ad API is secret and we won't give it out. And you allow people to download the videos, which, by the way, other apps do, but whatever, that's fine. So they explain what the problem was, and right. So Microsoft fixed those problems, and then Google introduced a new problem. And see, this is why I have the problem. This is like a game of rope-a-dope, you know, that Google is always changing the rules.
Well, but wait a minute. Okay. So here's the counter argument to that. This isn't a surprise. It's in the terms of service that it has to be HTML5.
Well, they publicly said, if you just fix these things, we will work with you to make this happen. And they did. And then they said, oh, no, now you have to do this other
stuff. But they didn't publicly say, we waive all terms of service if you just fix these two things.
That's true.
If you have a published list of rules and you violate a couple of them and Google says you got to fix that, it doesn't mean you can ignore the rest of them. And then I think it seems not unreasonable that Microsoft would say, Hey, we can get him again. Look, if we just...
All right. So, okay. But see, this is the difference between like a pedantic law and common sense. So, for example, if the speed limit is 65 miles an hour and I'm driving 70, but cars are passing
me
constantly...
Go ahead and tell that to the trooper.
I shouldn't be pulled over.
Go ahead and tell that to the state trooper.
You're right. But I think... But, and I mean this... In other words, I mean this honestly. I don't mean it like... I knew what I was doing, but this is going to be my excuse. I mean, literally, you're driving on the highway.
I was just
driving.
I was following traffic.
And everyone is like, every car is like zipping by you.
Yeah.
And then you get pulled over.
Right.
I think almost anyone in that situation, aside from our basic fear of policemen with, you know, guns, would be like, seriously?
Yeah.
Seriously.
We're thinking it.
Right. Or some of us will say it. Some of us have spent nights in places that are unpleasant. The point is, this is like that. Yeah. You know, it's unreasonable. I just Google doesn't adhere to their own rules. Their own apps for YouTube on both Android and iOS do not follow those rules that they demanded of Microsoft. None of the other mobile apps for YouTube follow those rules, including on Windows Phone. Only Microsoft has been held to this standard. So it's kind of tough. But let me get back to my original point. You said that Dvorak supported it, and I told you I had evidence.
Yeah.
Leo, this is the Windows Phone team. Are you kidding me? These guys, this is not like the sophisticated, you know, world beating. We figured out Google. We're gonna toss this one in their face and make. Are you kidding me? Okay, Windows Phone.
That's the best argument.
Seriously?
Okay, you're right.
I mean, really?
They're thinking that hard? No.
I think it's notable that Google agreed to work with these guys because I think in some ways they sort of felt like.
Well, that's the
Windows
other question.
Phone's safe.
That's the other question. Didn't Google say we'll help you fix your app?
Yes. They literally said we're going to help you.
And did they?
By the way,
what we don't know is how much they did. We don't know what they did.
Yeah. Well, right. And so the way – now I'm going to speculate. I'm going to – again, using my powers of perception with Microsoft and Google too. I sort of imagine that this was a big deal for Microsoft and that they had some pretty high-level people working on it.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that the way this worked at Google was like one day this intern came into the office and they were like, Bob, come here, Bob. Listen, you're going to work with the Microsoft guys.
What? Huh?
Just
do I have to
figure it out? We told them we'd do something. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
And make it last as long as it can last.
Yeah. Okay, just, Mr. Page. Yeah.
That's how I imagine it. You know.
You know, and I can back this up. Okay, because I have worked in a corporate environment where such a thing has happened.
Right.
To me, when we were at ZDNet, we were in the it was me and Gina Smith in the TV division. That was it. Yeah. Two people. And this was early 90s. And MGM wanted to do a tech network. And for some political reason I'm not privy to, my boss said, look, we're never going to do this. But go down once a week. Hang out at MGM. You've got an office down there. Pretend you're doing something. And then come back. And they were paying me like $95,000 a year to do this. So I said, okay.
All right.
Okay. I had a card key at the MGM
lot. It's like the guy, you know, after Microsoft knew they weren't doing OS 2, they must have had a guy who was supposedly helping the IBM guys.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And this must have been, he must have, that guy, whoever that was either completely oblivious or just new to the company.
Yeah.
And this was like our hazing ritual.
Well, they tell you.
Have fun with IBM.
Or they told you, which he did. My boss told me. You know, look, I just, you know, to be honest, we're not going to do anything, but go down there, have fun, enjoy yourself. It was a nice, we were working
have
with some
lunch.
Nice people, have lunch, do what we did. Gina and I did some crossword puzzles. It was seriously. And you might think that's the best job ever. It's not. No one, I think, in the long run wants to have a job where what you're doing is meaningless.
Wow.
They have
a lot of us.
In Japan, I just read an article. Companies are apparently can't fire people, or it's not easy to fire people. So they have a room. They put employees that they don't want anymore.
Oh, Leo, U.S. auto manufacturers had the same room. This is part of their union deal, right? Before those companies, two of the three, I think, almost went insolvent or needed government help. I mean, that's what they were doing. They were paying guys who were union workers to do nothing because they couldn't build the cars.
Well, that was union rules that, you know, those are what they call feather bedding rules. Feather bedding. So the Japanese companies are using something called banishment rooms. And they just and they just send you there and you do meaningless or menial tasks until you become depressed or disheartened enough to quit on your own.
I think I work for this company, Leo.
Hitachi, Sony, Toshiba, Seiko, NEC, and Panasonic are all doing this according to the Japan Daily Press.
Yeah, so I have to do something called I shouldn't probably do talk about this,
Penton Media is a wonderful company.
I have to gauge my own performance twice a year.
Oh, it's a self-performance review.
Are you kidding me? Like,
how are you? How do you think you're doing, Paul?
I think I'm doing great.
Good.
In fact, here's a kicker. You'll love this one. Yes. I think I'd be doing even better if I wasn't wasting my time on something that wasn't job related. You know what I mean?
Like seriously? Like a performance review.
Like, seriously.
I think that's not unusual, though. Don't companies, I mean.
Oh, I'm sure it's not unusual. I'm just saying.
As part of the performance review, don't you ask the employee how you feel?
Apparently you do.
Yeah. How do you feel? But do they give you any feedback after that? Like, well, you're wrong, Paul. In fact, we think you suck.
Right.
Do they do stuff like that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Not to me, but I suppose it's possible. I don't. Right. I mean, I guess if you were in that position, maybe you should be paying attention to it. I feel like I'm doing okay.
You're doing great, Paul. Paul, you're a superstar. And that podcast you've been doing on the side, keep it up. Right. Good work.
Please keep doing that.
We believe in you. That is really fabulous. Keep doing that much anyway. Yeah.
Your opinion matters.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for that feedback.
You'll enjoy some music now while we put you on hold.
Right.
All right. So I think this is good. I like this. But obviously, you know, there's no love lost between Google and Microsoft because both sides are taking little shots at each other anyway. I think.
Yeah. No, I guess just a final thought on YouTube is if Google didn't want to support YouTube on Windows Phone, I think they should have just said that.
Just say it.
Okay, fine. I do think that Google is heading toward a weird spot where, when you look at particular markets like Android, which has something like 84% market share right now, or
worldwide,
search, yes, yeah. And you know, internet search, even YouTube, which you could argue is sort of a monopoly on web video.
Oh yeah,
that at some point they're going to have to face regulatory oversight. That the antitrust regulators are going to have to look at this company, and it's this kind of stuff that causes that to happen. And it's always weird to watch companies make the same sort of belligerent mistakes, you know, and I wish they wouldn't do that. And the other thing, just generally speaking, I mean, the people they're screwing here, you know, I've got a lot of feedback from people who said, you know, Microsoft used to make secret APIs and they wouldn't ship Windows until Lotus couldn't run. And remember That's this, right. Remember that?
Right.
Yeah. 20 years ago. But
and they got in a lot of trouble.
That didn't harm Google. And when Google does this stuff, it doesn't really harm Microsoft. It harms me. It harms the people who are customers of both companies. Like, Google doesn't get to get revenge on Microsoft for something they did 20 years ago to someone else. That doesn't even make sense.
Well, no, the revenge is...
what a weird, vindictive attitude.
No, it's Scroogled. Come on. It's about something more recent.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, sure.
It's about something a lot more recent.
Leo, that's just good old-fashioned competitive fun.
When we do it, it's just hijinks.
How could you have a problem with that? It's hilarious.
It's just hijinks. Google man.
The guy's reading
hijinks.
Your mail. It's fun.
There's no love lost either way.
I will.
But I think you say a very important thing, which is the end user is who loses here.
Yeah. And that's my own personal problem with
and
this.
It was but the anyway. Same thing when CBS and Time Warner are fighting, right? Who loses?
Mommy, why are you
why
and Daddy
are you fighting? Yeah.
Yeah. I will leave the Google thing on a good note because I am in a good mood today.
Jolly Paul.
Google did, I think last week, extend support for new Exchange ActiveSync connections on Gmail and Google Calendar.
Oh, good. For how long?
The end of 2013. You may recall the original deadline was very quick. I think it was in January. They announced it in December and said we're killing it in January. And then they extended it to July. And the update in Windows Phone that adds support for CalDAV and CarDAV, which is the fix for this, you will recall, shipped in GDR2, which is just now coming out. And so they extended that deadline through the end of the year. The truth is, though, I think existing customers, this actually isn't going to affect a lot of people even when they do shut it down, because as long as you have a Gmail or Google account today and you've connected it to a mobile device over EAS, it's always going to work going forward, at least until they eventually cut that off as well. What they're cutting off is new connections. So in other words, you come up as brand new Gmail, Google Calendar customer all of a sudden, and now you want to connect your account to any Exchange ActiveSync client, whether it's the iPhone or a Windows phone or whatever, after whatever date, I think it's January 1st, 2014, that won't work anymore. So it's really just new free customers, like people on the free services, and new ones, not existing ones. So
hook it up now, kids, because
But it was nice of them to do that.
Now
they didn't
or
have
never.
To.
Yeah. Well, they probably that's a case of them saying, golly, we're getting a lot of blowback from customers.
For nothing. I mean, for nothing. For something that if they literally had if they had shut this off, I think it would have been months before the world noticed. I really do.
Really? You think so?
Yep. Yeah, because it only would affect new people.
On there, a lot of people do it on iPhone.
No, I know that, but they don't. They already have their accounts. Like in other words, you buy an iPhone, you've had a Gmail account for 6 years or
it's
whatever.
Already
you don't
set up. Yeah,
it's already.
But there's new people buying iPhones. There's a new iPhone coming out. I don't know. Lisa, for whatever reason, I don't know why, was resetting up her iPhone, and she called me. She said, "How come I can't?"
But it would work because you've already set it up for EAS.
It's on a per account basis.
It's on your account. Yeah. Yeah, it would still work.
So it's not that you have to set it up on this phone ahead of time. It's that you have to set it up at one point.
That's what I mean. In other words,
that account. I get it. Right. Okay.
It's on the account. So.
Oh, well, that's good.
That's what I mean. In other words.
And how long will that last?
That's the question. So we don't know. You know, theoretically, they could get rid of that at any time.
Right. They're not promising to keep that alive.
It's Googled. We'll see.
Soon. Coming soon.
When will then be now? Soon.
To a theater near you. Scroggled. And finally, another foot in the
grave. We end as we must.
With a moment of silence for Zune. One more.
I'd like to, there is, like I said earlier, there's a big group of people, believe it or not. I mean, not big compared to iTunes users, but big group of people using the Zune stuff. And
every time.
Some people.
Every time I look through that drawer with my Zune HD is sitting forlornly.
By the way, it's still a great device.
It's a great device.
It's a great device. It just is. It's a great device.
But I should point out it's sitting next to a number of iPods as well. I
mean, of course it is, yeah. Well, that was
those are great devices too, but we don't need them anymore.
So the Zune device itself, I don't want to get too far into the editorializing thing, is also a product of another era, right? This is the era where our stuff was all... I'm sorry. I can't say it. There are certain words I can't say because I'm from Boston.
I'm not mocking error.
You're not?
No. I was just taking a deep breath. I was not laughing
sounded like
at
you. Were,
you.
I could, I, maybe I'm just saying.
No. You are sensitive. I didn't even notice.
Oh, good. So an epoch, maybe we'll call it for now, a different time.
Yeah, different time.
When we would centralize all of our stuff on a PC, and in this case, digital media content, and then we would sync it to a device. And so if you wanted to do something like subscribe to a podcast, subscribe to the podcast on your PC, and then you would sync it to your device, and you bring it out in the world, you listen to it a little bit, and you bring it back, and you sync it back again. And then if you listen to the podcast later on the PC, it would sync because, it went between the devices. And this is people are very comfortable. Some people are still very comfortable with this approach. And that was iTunes in the day, and that it was certainly Zune in the day. And there are still people who do that. And some of them do that because they just are, like I said, are comfortable with it. Some people do it because they have to. So if you have a Zune HD device or if you have a Windows Phone 7X handset, you have no choice. Like if you want to do any kind of sync stuff, that's the only way to do it. You have to do it on the PC through this software. But, of course, Microsoft is moving the ecosystem on toward the cloud and mobile devices and just like Apple has done also on their end, where you can have a Windows Phone handset or a Windows tablet or whatever it is, and you're out in the world, and that's the thing. You do everything over the air, and there's no PC sync. It's just your stuff is centralized in the cloud. So, over time, stuff is going to be dropping off the face of the earth. I have to admit, I didn't see this one coming, but when Microsoft announced last week that they were killing Microsoft points, I started getting emails from people who said, well, what about the Zune software? The Zune software uses Microsoft points. So if I want to buy like a movie or a TV show or music, I buy them with Microsoft points. And if I don't have enough Microsoft points, it lets me buy more Microsoft points. The whole thing is Microsoft points. Are they going to update the Zune software to accommodate local currency? And that was when I sort of confronted, this is me, I know Microsoft, and I was thinking, I cannot see them updating the software. And sure enough, they're not going to update the software. What they're going to do is cease the ability to make purchases through the Zune software on the PC. So you won't be able to buy music.
Oh, boy.
Through this software on your PC, you won't be able to buy TV shows and movies, and you won't be able to rent movies. Purchases are going to be gone. And the target date for this to happen is tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
A couple of days. Because it's tied to the day when Microsoft points go off into the sunset. Oh, boy. Now, the problem is the Zune people, the people who do love this software or have to use it or whatever, are freaking out, understandably, because there is no Xbox Music solution on Windows 7 that they can use. There's no Xbox Video solution. What Microsoft has done, unfortunately, is it's staggered the release of new stuff incorrectly with the termination of services in Zune. So, for example, there's an Xbox Music web client, which is not, it's not ideal. But again, if you think about the cloud-based nature of Xbox Music, it's not horrible. And you can use that on Windows 7. But the version they have right now doesn't let you buy anything. So it's, and of course you can't do any sync either. So you'll have to figure that out. You can, you buy stuff on the device, perhaps. There's an Xbox Video web client coming, but not until the fall, maybe in the winter, sometime before the end of the year. So if you want to like rent movies or stream movies or access your own stuff that you've already bought over the web, you can't do that right now. And so this capability is leaving Zune. And it's on Xbox today if you have Windows 8 or Windows RT or Windows Phone 8 in the case of music. We'll see. So it's kind of a weird transition period. The other thing is people are concerned about other stuff that's available in the Zune software that they don't see elsewhere. So, for example, the Zune PC software offers support for podcasts. Xbox Music does not. The only place you can get native podcast support in the Microsoft ecosystem outside of Zune is on Windows Phone. And then only in certain markets. And so if you live in the United States, you can subscribe to podcasts directly on the phone. You can, it does all that stuff. It works as you would expect. But a lot of countries around the world don't have that. I don't know why, but for whatever reason, the podcast support in Windows Phone 8 doesn't work in Windows Phone 7 too, in other parts of the world. And so for those guys, they would have to use a third-party app, kind of like you'd have to do on like Android. Android doesn't have a podcast solution. So people are kind of freaking out because anytime something is taken away, obviously it's kind of a slippery slope. I mean, at some point, that Zune software becomes so denuded that it's, not very interesting anymore.
Doesn't do anything.
Yeah. I mean, it does local media management. I've actually installed Windows 7 on a PC again so I can see what happens. I took a bunch of shots of this thing. I'm very curious to see how this goes. So I have, content that I purchased off of my Microsoft account on Zune maybe or Xbox. It doesn't matter. At any time. I mean, will it still show up in that client? And if it does, can I download it? Can I sync that to a device? I'll find out. But this is another one of those areas where I kind of need to see it before I can be too definitive about it. But I can say at least that it is true that some stuff's going away and it's it's not coming back. It's not going to be as good as it was, that's for sure.
Before we move on to our picks of the week.
Yeah.
I want to do a little Audible, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Audible.com, of course, a longtime sponsor of the show, and we love them.
Hi, Paul, says.
Who says? Audible says, hi, Paul. Audible says,
yeah.
Oh, that's must be a new thing. Hi, Paul. Hi, Paul. I know you. You're the guy who listens to all those books.
Yeah.
Audible was speaking of, oh, yeah, it does. It says, hi, Leo. Audible is one of those stores. It's the, I think, audiobook store. They now have 150,000 titles, which is amazing. We're going to tell you how you can get one of those titles free. If you've never listened to audiobooks, you might be saying, I don't know if it's for me. And I don't know if it's for you, so try it. It's for me. It's for Paul. People love Audible. I mean, really, because it's a way to spend time in a plane or, as Paul just did, or in the car or at the gym. And I'm telling you, an hour on the treadmill is no big deal because I'm listening to a great book. What did you – I presume that you got some books for the trip. What did you like? Anything you liked?
I also listen to Audible books walking around my neighborhood like a homeless person.
That's a good thing.
And so I've met all the dogs in the neighborhood. That's been fun. And then when I did this before I left, I bought a bunch of Stephen King short stories. I had read that, listened to, I should say, that Joyland book.
Yes.
Which, by the way, is awesome. And that, I recommend that one very strongly. Joyland is a great story. It's manageable. It's like 7.5 hours long. The person who narrated it is new to Audible, I believe, is perfect. Just perfect for this for the story. And it caused me to examine Audible and look for some Stephen King stuff that was shorter. And so before the trip, I downloaded a bunch of, I would say
this
one.
Is 7 hours. This is unheard of.
Right. Well, there's a bunch of stuff on Audible that's a lot shorter than that. So as short as 55 minutes, you know, from Stephen King anyway.
Wow.
And some of them are like an hour and a half, 2 hours, 2.5 hours. So I've listened to a bunch of them. But the one I'm listening right now to, you may recall this story. There's one called that was actually a Kindle exclusive when it first came out, because the Kindle is a kind of a character in the book. And it's at first you think it's a little heavy handed. It's like a Amazon product placement. But actually, it goes down into some kind of a time travel thing, and it's very reminiscent of that the Kennedy book that he did, like 11/22/63, where it's, you know, time traveling to go back to save the president kind of thing. That actually factors into this story. But I've read The Gingerbread Girl, which is also fantastic. Stationary Bike, which I actually remember reading from a long time ago. Riding the Bullet, another classic one. But I just finished R, and that's a great, great one. And then the next one I've got on tap is it's called In the Tall Grass. And this is one of at least a couple books. I think he's written two now with his son.
Oh, neat.
And actually, this is not a full book. It's only 2 hours long. So it must be a short story, but or a novella type book. But his son writes under the name Joe Hill because, you know, he didn't want to be thought of as someone who was kind of riding his father's coattails. But I've heard that those books, I have not started that one yet. Tomorrow morning I'll begin that one. But, you know, obviously if you're starting out on Audible and you're doing the freebie for that first one, you should choose something big, like, you know, Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, which, by the way, I also finished recently.
You finished it. How did it turn out?
Not good for the Germans.
Okay. That joke never ceases to amuse.
My wife always makes fun of me for that. She's like, do you think it's going to end differently this time? And I'm like, I think they're going to get it right. I think they're going to be okay.
Boy, you can get that, by the way, for free. I mean, so your choice is 50 hours or 1 hour. I don't know if you should buy books by the pound, but...
No, well, if you want to do that, though, I mean, obviously It and The Stand are amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Stephen King, really long-form stories. And it is an interesting book, and I may go back and listen to that one soon, too, because I just heard an interview with Stephen King, and he described that he has a sequel to The Shining coming out next month.
What?
Yeah. And he said, so someone asked him naturally, well, would you consider making sequels to other books? For example, It, you know, another one of your classics. And he says, It is the one book I'm never going to revisit. He said, that one scared me too much. And he's like, I'm not writing about that.
Wow.
And I was like, that's interesting. So, you know, maybe I'll go back and give that one a shot again, too. But that's a big book.
A lot
that's
of new big... books coming out in the fall, including Dr. Sleep, a novel. Is that
That's it. That's the sequel to The Shining. Yep.
Yeah. Ooh.
I believe it involves the son from the original story.
Ooh. That'll come out in September.
It is 45 hours long.
Here's the deal. Get the first book. You'll be signing up for the Gold account. That's the Book a Month subscription. And your next book could be Dr. Sleep. But you pay nothing in the first 30 days. And if you decide to cancel, keep the book. That's fine. That's our gift to you. And I tell you what, you're just going to really enjoy audible.com. Paul and I do. They've got apps for iOS, Android, and of course Windows Phone, as well as Windows RT and Metro. I'm just telling you, I love it. I listen every night. I listen every day. I listen in the gym. I listen everywhere. Audible.com/windows to get your free book right now. Audible.com/windows. Wrapping it up for Windows Weekly this week with our tip of the week and our tool of the week, or whatever, our program of the week. You are the tool of the week, Paul.
I am. Thank you.
Yes.
So you should click. If you click on that link in the tip, I wrote about this the other day. I have multiple Skype clients installed on my computer and then in my office as well on the devices. And so when you folks call me or Raphael calls me on Skype or whatever, I have multiple pop-ups occurring, right? And I think I complained in the past about how in Outlook.com they had added this integration in the browser where I would answer the call with the desktop client, but it would keep ringing in the browser.
That's really frustrating.
It's driving me insane.
Yes.
The funny thing about the screenshot that you're looking at is you can see four call notifications. For some reason, when I took it, I only had four, but usually I have five because the Metro app has a bug where it usually throws up two. So you get all these notifications. And the problem is, like, I'll answer it in the desktop client. And the one in the browser will never end. The one in the
MetroPerch
will end, but it takes a while. But then what happens is my phone start ringing. And it's like, guys, you gotta figure this out. Like, it's a mess. So people have said to me, well, why don't you just uninstall the plugin, you know? But here's the joke, and this is the kicker. This is really funny. They've added Skype integration to Outlook.com, sort of, without a plugin. So that notification that you see in the screenshot,
yeah,
you don't have to install – you can't install it. Well, you can, but you don't have to install anything. That just appears. But the joke is on you, because the first time you try to answer it in the browser, yeah, it says, hey, that's cute. You want to answer the call. You need to install a plugin.
No.
Yes. So that thing occurs whether you want it or not.
No.
There's no way to turn it off. But here's – so that's this has terrible. Been driving me insane. So anyway, I found out this is a little – this is why it's a tip. It's a kind of a tip. The way you turn it off is you install the plugin.
Ah.
Here's why.
Why?
Because once the plugin is installed in your browser, it's like a little mini application.
Right.
And when you call me and I answer it, it knows that I answered it and it stops ringing.
Oh, hallelujah.
Yes. And then, but here's the thing. If you don't want it to appear in your browser at all, which I don't.
Disable the plugin.
You can disable the plugin.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Yes.
It's insane. It is insane. But that's how you solve it.
That's completely logical, Paul. I'm surprised you didn't think of that.
I know. So there it is.
Completely.
Just install the plugin.
Yep.
Get rid of it.
Get rid of it by installing it.
Hilarious.
That's called winning by losing.
Yeah. It's just called losing, actually. But yes, close.
And your software pick of the week.
Yeah, there's a lot I could have shown. You know, again, the guy who was complaining about the phone stuff is going to be really excited about my picks here. But
more phone stuff.
Yeah, a bunch of phone stuff. So, first of all, I should say that if you have a Nokia Lumia 920, 925, or 928, be sure to grab that Pro Camera app. Now, actually, you have to have the Amber update to get it. So,
what?
If you have a 920,
come with it?
No, it requires something that's in Amber. So, the Pro Camera app is the one that comes in the 1020.
Got it.
So
I get it.
Yeah. So currently in the U.S., you can't get Amber on AT&T or GDR2, but you will. Right. That will happen sometime soon. When that happens, you'll be able to grab the Pro Camera app. Actually, you can grab it anyway. It just won't work, but you'll be able to use it. And it's that app that's on the 1020. It's fantastic, and it's a great app. So be sure to get that. It's free. It's one of those excellent Nokia things. More generally, though, this happened when I was away. Microsoft released the unexpectedly, I'm glad they did, because I've been kind of complaining about this kind of thing. They have these excellent Bing apps in Windows 8 and Windows RT. So Bing News, Finance, Weather, and Sports. And actually, in Windows 8.1, they have a couple more of them. But these are kind of the core ones. And these are great apps. And they ported them to Windows Phone 8. And so they're free. And they're amazing. And everyone who has a Windows Phone 8 device should grab these things. I've now replaced a couple of different weather apps. You know, you can pin them to your start screen and have those kind of automatic weather forecasts, you know, on a tile. The one that is in Bing Weather is beautiful. It's the best looking one I've seen so far.
It is nice.
And the Bing News app is amazing.
Yeah.
And you may recall I had a tip, I don't know, probably from last year or early this year, where Bing News on Windows 8, for some reason, I'm one of the news sources in there. And so you can actually ping, hello. You can actually pin my website to your start screen as a news source in Bing
great.
News. Yeah.
That's great.
Now, when you read the articles, it still goes to the mobile version of IE, but it's kind of a nice presentation of my most recent articles, you know, like in the Bing News format, which is beautiful looking. And I have to say, you know, these apps are beautiful examples of how the same content can be pushed across tablets and phones,
yeah,
which have different display, you know, types and, you know, landscape versus portrait and all that kind of stuff. And it's just these are great examples of how those things can look beautiful on both kinds of devices. And they're just fantastic apps, really, really nice apps. So be sure to get those.
Get Der Bingle apps.
Yeah. And hopefully they'll port the new ones over too.
Yeah. And the Pro app if you don't have it, 1020.
Yeah.
But yep. You got to get the Amber alert first.
I know. A lot of requirements. Yeah.
Hey, Paul, always fun to do the show with just you.
I wish I could see you, Leo.
Reminds you. Oh, am I still frozen?
It's me. I'm just frozen on me. Like, I got this look. No, it's.
Hey, we got through the whole show without you freezing, and that's all I really
feel. Yeah, which is like a huge improvement over the past 3 weeks. Yeah. So.
Paul Thurrott is at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Don't forget windowsphonebook.com for the free copy of his newest tome, 600 plus pages. Free. Free.
Oh, you're back.
I'm moving now. Somebody pushed a button.
Okay.
Yeah, it's magic. And Mary Jo Foley, of course, will be back next week after her beer hiatus.
And I'm sure she's doing something work-related.
I'm sure she is. We do the show Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. Please watch live. We love having you here. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video available shortly after the show concludes. Wherever you find your favorite shows, twit.tv/WW is a good start for Windows Weekly. You can also find you know, you can use a third party. I'm not going to say Zune anymore because it's not available on Zune starting tomorrow.
No, it still is. It still is.
Oh, I thought you said podcasts.
No, they're still there.
Oh, okay.
That's one of the few things that is still there. All right. Yeah, you know, that is still there.
Okay. And of course, all the other third-party apps. Hey, Paul, thanks so much. Have a great week. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Hi, as you go to New York, bring me Cronuts.
Cronuts still a thing?
Oh, Cronuts will always be a thing. Maybe not, actually. Remember how... Krispy Kreme was, I almost said Krusty Kreme. Krispy Kreme was like
the Leo, thing. I told you my Krispy Kreme story. No. I had the best line of my life was about Krispy Kreme.
Oh, yeah?
Which is, you know, they came to the Boston area finally. They expanded, and finally they got to New England. Yes. And of course, New England is Dunkin' Donuts country.
Dunkin' Donuts territory.
And they put one in Dedham very briefly. And I said to a friend as we drove by the Krispy Kreme, I said, mark my words. New England will be Krispy Kreme's Vietnam. and they're gone.
Right, they're gone. But Dunkin' Donuts lives on.
Yep.